They're working on that. And then there are people who are saying, actually, maybe it wouldn't be such a good idea if artificial intelligence understood itself, because then it could develop independent goals, and that would be in contradiction to ours. And then there are, of course, there are also people who think, well, great, you know, there are evolutionary successors, so let them develop their goals. But again, this is if you start from the position that human beings are worth preserving, and that's the basis of most ethical systems. If you start from that, then I think you can easily understand the argument that human mathematics as a practice of human beings is something that is worth preserving. And then if that comes into conflict with commercial priorities, then that's a conflict, and it has to be resolved in one way or another. And we have, and the mathematicians spontaneously, and again, you could say, well, they're selfish, they're speciesist, they're anti, they are discriminating against these technological superintelligences. But you know, human beings spontaneously are going to say that preservation of his human communal activities is an interest, a value in itself. Now then come the question, well, of course there are a lot of flaws and problems with the way mathematics is organized. It has its hierarchical structure. It is some people are privileged and other people are not. It has internationally it's concentrated in, for the most part, in the wealthy countries, and they dominate. And there are all kinds of issues like that. But those are to be resolved within mathematics for sure. I have yet to see anybody arguing that handing it over to Silicon Valley is going to resolve any of those questions. That's not the...
Yeah, and so the question is, why are the AI titans so interested in mathematics?
Well, this is a part of the contest to be the first to build what can be claimed to be artificial general intelligence. The idea being, and this is how I understand it, it's a commercial competition. There's a promise that AI will bring enormous profits to the investors if they invest in the right model, and the profits will be based on selling services to corporations in the same way that they are currently selling cloud computing services. One of the reasons that so much wealth has accumulated in Silicon Valley is that they are selling these services widely. It's not primarily because of advertising has a lot to do with it, but I think, and it's your job as the journalist to check these figures to see what proportion of their revenue comes from the cloud services. Overall, they are not, for the most part, they're not breaking even. They're losing money. And all this investment in infrastructure and AI infrastructure is premised on the assumption that at some point they will stop losing money and there will be enormous profits. And the profits are not going to come because they can solve mathematical problems. There's no profit in solving mathematical problems. You can get a prize, you can get a salary if you teach at a university, but you don't, you're not going to be able to take your theorem and then, reproduce it. The theorem itself is free. Once it's been proved, it's free. The reasoning ability is what they're trying to imitate, and the argument is that once they can imitate the reasoning ability of mathematics, then they will be able to apply this to much more general questions of reasoning. And as I said earlier, a lot of reasoning goes on in corporate offices, and the promise is that by selling their reasoning services, in the same way that they're selling cloud computing services now, they will be able to, the corporations that buy these services will be able to save money by reducing the number of workers. And that's all, when we talk about the AI job apocalypse, that's what that's all about.
And so the AI titans, they're asking the question, what at the present time can mathematics do that computing can't do, and how can we crystallize that capacity, that pure reason that mathematics delivers service of artificial general intelligence?
And the assumption is that, you know, a mathematical argument is correct or not. That's something that is, let's say, there's not an ambiguity as there is in pretty much anything else. So mathematics has that characteristic, that the arguments are valid or not. And there are even ways of testing that if they're written in a certain form. So the idea is that mathematics is currently considered the best domain in which to test the reasoning capacities of their different models. And it's also assumed that only, you know, there are many, many startups as well as the big corporations, the Magnificent Seven, that are competing, and the ones that get there first will survive when the industry is consolidated, and that's what the investors are counting on. So there is a huge battle for investment, and they've chosen mathematics as the battlefield. And furthermore, the mathematicians who were enthusiastic about this collaboration with industry for whatever reason acknowledge that it's not going to last for very long, because, as I said, there's no profit in mathematics, no significant profit in mathematics. Now, that's not completely
there's no profit in mathematics in a pure sense.
That's yes. Let me qualify that, because of course, a lot of engineering problems are based on solving well posed mathematical questions. So a lot of applied mathematics goes to solving valuable practical problems. In fact, you can consider computer science to be a kind of hypertrophied branch of applied mathematics. It's taken on its own typical techniques, like other branches that are not so big. But as far as engineering is concerned, this all makes perfect sense, that if you can mechanize the solutions, it's been going on for a long time. This is what computers have been doing, to mechanizing the calculation. People do not carry out lengthy calculations of on the basis of engineering models of different processes. And the idea is that AI will contribute not just the calculations, but will also be able to reason to find the appropriate calculations for a given problem. So as far as the contribution to engineering is concerned, there are profits in that, but profits in proving theorems, I think that's nobody really believes that. There's the last few years have seen competition over the International Mathematical Olympiad. That is a competition of high school students from around the world. They're given a certain number of problems to solve. And then it's often the case that people who do very well in this Olympiad go on to become mathematicians, successful mathematicians. DeepMind and OpenAI and a few others have been competing in the Olympiad, and they've been announcing with great fanfare their gold medals, the highest medal. That shows that they are, their mathematical models, by this standard, are comparable to the best high school students in the world. But again, being able to solve problems in the International Mathematical Olympiad, that is not itself solutions to these problems are not merchandise that can be sold at a profit. So this is to demonstrate their capacity, and again to attract investment in this epic competition.
Who are the most sought after mathematicians in the field of artificial intelligence? I'm not talking about what specific individuals, but what areas of math are the most precious as far as people like the ones who run Palantir, what are the most useful, the most practical, the most powerful areas of mathematics?
This is not, you know, I have no idea what, you know, what kind of mathematics is being used by Palantir.
And that's just an example. But right. in the realm of artificial intelligence.
But right now, the big tech labs are interested in all branches of mathematics because, I heard recently that, and this, in fact, it's not a secret, that some of them are hoping to solve the millennium problems. I've heard from several people who've worked with them that they're interested in mathematics only in order to get prizes. So what are the millennium problems? In the year 2000, the Clay Mathematics Institute, which is a charitable foundation supporting mathematics, announced 7 very difficult unsolved problems called the millennium problems, each of which, the solution to any of which would bring $1 million prize. $1 million is not a big deal. You know, the DeepMind, I don't know how quickly they go through $1 million. I think they go through several $1 million or maybe several tens of millions of dollars a day in their research. But so the aim is not to win the financial reward, but to show that they have done this. So these are 7 problems. One of them was solved primarily by a Russian mathematician named Grigory Perelman, who did something that brought him a lot of attention, which was he refused the prize. In fact, he became some kind of hermit, and he refused it on the grounds that it was distorting the purposes of mathematics.
Namely?
Namely the exploration of thought and of the understanding, which is what I said earlier. This Perelman solved not just this millennium problem, but a more general one that had been formulated by somebody named William Thurston. And William Thurston was a mathematician with an extraordinary geometric imagination. And he reinterpreted this Poincaré conjecture, which was the one that Perelman solved, one of the 7 problems that Perelman solved, in a broader framework, and it's called the geometrization conjecture, and Perelman actually solved that. I mean, he explained how it could be solved, and then took a number of years for mathematicians to write down the details, to check all of his arguments. They were unexpected to a large extent. Thurston is the one who's had the quotation that is most frequently cited about the purpose of mathematics is to develop human understanding. And he said he sympathized with Perelman. He could understand. Perelman was ridiculed by many people for refusing to take this $1 million prize. People thought he was crazy. And Thurston said, no, he has principles. He has, you may or may not agree with him, but the principles are, how he chooses to express these principles, but the principles are valid in themselves. So many people appreciate Thurston. Perelman is, as I say, something of a hermit, and people are not in touch with him, as far as I know.
And here's something that humans can do, the human mind can do, but artificial intelligence systems can't, which is come up with totally unusual, arguably unique value judgments.
So I've been told that I won't name names because I don't want to get sued or you to get sued, but that certain leaders in artificial intelligence are aim at solving one of the millennium problems, these 6 remaining problems. And I even heard a prediction that one of them would be solved by next month, June 2026. Now, I'm pretty skeptical. Of course, that would be very convenient if they could announce it at the International Congress of Mathematicians. I have no doubt that they are planning something. The industry is planning something for the International Congress of Mathematicians.
But again, I mean, getting back to this idea that that the human mind, people have a conscience. Mm-hmm. And some people possibly have no conscience, which makes them very scary and mm-hmm. psychopathic and completely mm-hmm. abnormal. Mm-hmm. People like Adolf Hitler supposedly had no conscience. One mm-hmm. can think of other ones.
Some there are people them, who have no... Some of them in Silicon Valley, even. Some of them are... sociopaths, let's say. Psychopaths, maybe not. But there's seems to be a high concentration of sociopaths. You know, then there's this, in the industry, again, I'm not going to name names, but, you know, you can just read the headlines and read the...
But you can have sociopathic and psychopathic humans, mm-hmm. and you can have human beings who exhibit the most supreme level of ethical and moral mm-hmm. standard, but you don't have psychopathic computer systems or software programs, or perhaps at some point you will, but mm-hmm. it seems to defy the definition of what makes the human mind the human mind.
Well, again, there are regularly announcements of deceitful artificial intelligences and then there are the deceitful people who find ways to overcome the safeguards that are built in, all of which motivate an international movement called Pause AI, because, you know, the engineers are cheerfully speculating that there's a 10% probability that that AI will wipe out humanity. No. But they have to keep doing it for whatever reason, because, you know, be part of the historical process. Pause AI, there was a letter connected with this Pause AI signed by 140 German scientists not that long ago. And one of the ones who signed was Peter Scholze, who was one of the most highly respected mathematicians of his generation. He, in the past 15 years or so, he has overseen and inspired a rethinking of many of the basic principles of the branch of mathematics in which I'm involved, in number theory, or cannot be ignored. It made such a transformation. He said that his, in German, that his attitude to let me get the exact quotation in German. I already think of the influence of AI to be strongly negative on humanity, on democracy, and on the planet. That's what he said. He's a Fields Medalist. So Fields Medalists are the people who have been recognized before the age of 40 as having made outstanding contributions to mathematics, and he got his Fields Medal in 2018, fairly young age. So the Fields Medalists, it's typical that when the press looks for somebody to speak for mathematics, speak on behalf of mathematics, they go to the Fields Medalists. It's somehow natural and understandable. Of course, that's just one subgroup, somehow maybe the ones who have been most honored by the profession are not necessarily the ones who have a sense of the profession as a whole. But anyway, he's one, and he's came out very strongly saying that the influence of AI is negative. But there are other Fields Medalists who are enthusiastic about AI. And then there are some who have more measured positions, more qualified positions. You know, they're saying that it can't be ignored because it's there. It has to be treated with care. But one thing for sure is that there are going to be several Fields Medalists with different perspectives on AI are going to be endorsing the Leiden Declaration.
Michael Harris is an American mathematician specializing in number theory. He's a professor of math at Columbia University, emeritus professor at Université Paris Cité in Paris, France, and a member of the American Philosophical Society since 2025. Halfway through our rendezvous, Michael received word on his smartphone about an anti-AI demo taking place out on the street in front of Columbia's main gate, Broadway and West 116th Street, at noon. We both attended. It was a noisy affair.
Hey, my professor, not a bot.
Hey, my professor, not a bot.
Hey, my professor, not a bot.
Okay, hello. I hail from the field of science and technology studies, where we refuse to treat technology, any technology, as inevitable, or as the next step in some predetermined march of progress. We also refuse to treat any technology as slick and sleek black boxes, where everything that goes into them doesn't matter. The first issue is labor. You have probably heard nonstop fretting about how Columbia is supposed to prepare you for an increasingly AI-driven job market, or how AI is taking jobs. None of this is inevitable, and I'm tired of talking about it. What I want to bring to you instead is a different kind of labor issue, exploitation. At a local level, Anthropic stole our scholarship to train its models, and it continues to steal our intellectual property through nonstop scraping.
Shame!
At a global level, OpenAI paid Kenyan data workers less than $2 a day to do the very human work AI companies purport their models can do. Sama, thank you. Sama, a Meta contractor, human traffics people to do the work of labeling and moderating extremely violent content, all for very low pay. This is exploitation.
This morning, a friend of mine told me that she went to Barnard's Career Center to help for ask for help funding transportation to and from her unpaid internship this summer. And you know what she was told? She was told that the best thing they could give her was some advice that she should take a job as an AI trainer this summer.
Boo!
Thank you. What do we do when we're standing face to face with another person, being told that the best option for our future is to train AI to make money, or to write with AI to save time, or to displace our imaginations to an image generator? As individuals, we have to opt out. We have to stop using AI. But more than that, as social people, we have to look that other person in the eye and say, no, I believe in my education. I believe in building my skills. I believe in participating in social life as a strange, unique, wonderful person and not being just the mouthpiece for a machine. And I hope you do too.
AI will never teach us.
AI will never teach us.
Let's go to office hours.
Let's go to office hours.
AI will never teach us.
AI will never teach us.
Let's go to office hours.
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 AI will never teach us.
AI will never teach us.
We are here today to affirm and protect what we all hold very dear, a liberal arts education and the human relationships that sustain it, relationships between students and professors. Yeah. We are here today to share an urgent warning. We recognize that these relationships and this liberal arts tradition is under threat. These things are under threat from AI and from the uncritical support that this administration has shown for AI.
Shame!
One, we learn as humans. Two, we teach as humans. Three, let's tell AI goodbye, bye, bye, bye. One, we learn as humans. Two, we teach as humans. Three, let's tell AI goodbye, bye, bye, bye.
Woo!
Hello, everybody. I'd like to start by talking about the staggering environmental costs of AI. The computational power required to train sophisticated models with billions of parameters and then fine-tune them once they're in use is immensely increasing greenhouse gas emissions and straining our electricity grid. Though a single ChatGPT-4 search query uses relatively little water compared to the amount required to produce one hamburger, the cumulative water consumption of the data centers required to cool this hardware adds up and disrupts local ecosystems where water disruptions are felt. Often, AI infrastructure exploits vulnerable communities, exacerbating existing environmental inequities. For example, new data centers are being built in the United States in areas already facing water shortages, such as Arizona and Texas, simply because this is areas where energy is cheaper. In Memphis, Elon Musk's xAI is operating a massive data center in Boxtown, a predominantly black neighborhood already home to numerous industrial facilities, and has been criticized for operating 35 methane gas turbines that don't have the necessary permits or required pollution control.
Don't let education die!
Don't let education die!
Fund grad students, fuck AI!
Fund grad students, fuck AI!
No more funds for Chat and Claude!
No more funds for Chat and Claude!
We know AI is a fraud!
We know AI is a fraud!
No more funds for Chat and Claude!
No more funds for Chat and Claude!
We know AI is a fraud!
We know AI is a fraud!
We know AI is a fraud!
I had a chat bot! I'd use it in the morning, I'd use it in the evening, all over this land. I'd use it in danger, and then without warning, I'd use my love between my brothers and my sisters, all over this land.
60s classic, If I Had a Hammer, reversioned by Hannah, a Columbia University senior playing banjo, Ted Schmiedler on accordion, and slapping that double bass, Grace Costi, a history and poli-sci senior at Columbia. For an update on anti-AI activism at Columbia University, go to greenplanetmonitor.net. For today's GPM, a joint production of Earth Chronicle Productions and 93.3 CFMU-FM, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. Thanks to our news editor, Kylie Wong. Listen to, read, and watch more Earth stories at greenplanetmonitor.net. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Blueberry, and on Canada's Harbinger Media Network. I'm David Kattenberg. Over and out for now.
For most albatross species, raising a chick is a real challenge. Waved albatrosses produce such slow-growing, needy offspring that females lay only a single egg every 2 years, and both parents need to share the load until youngsters can hunt on their own. Albatrosses tend to pair for life, and it can take a while to find the right partner. So some species don't start breeding until they're 10 years old, with some individuals even waiting till they're 20. Reunited pairs go through an elaborate synchronized ritual of braying, wing spreading, and bill tapping to reaffirm their bonds before getting down to the business of breeding. In Hawaii, biologists were puzzled to find that some Laysan albatross pairs had not one, but two eggs. Then they found that some of the birds going so faithfully through the ritualized series of courtship displays were both female. Although the eggs were fertilized by males that had since died or were from other pairs, The females were bonded to each other. Many of these female couples remain together for years. They can't successfully raise both offspring, but their combined efforts are necessary to raise one chick. For Bird Note, I'm Wen Fei Tong.